This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 474, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand, put a little love in your heart. You see it's getting late, please don't hesitate, put a little love in your heart. And the world will be a better place, and the world will be a better place.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 474. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and that's my co-host, birthday boy, Josh Flanagan.
The things I do for you people. Chip on my shoulder a mile wide. Hi.
Talking to your friend about comics on your birthday is a hardship.
I've been looking forward to this all day. Are you kidding me there, Chappie?
We are iFanboy. We like comics. We read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call it the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book on the show along with other books of the week and other fun stuff. Some listener mail. It'll be fun. Spoiler warning. Here it is. There. That's all you get.
You better figure it out yourself.
Figure it out. It'll be spoilers. Josh.
Yeah.
It was your pick.
Yeah, it was. So at first I was like, I don't know what I'm going to
read. I had another big week, did you?
Yes.
I had another 19-book week.
Like, I don't know.
Better have five next week.
But, I was like, I don't have time. And then once I got going, I was like, yeah, I'm having a fun time reading comics.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I complaining about reading comics? That's the dumbest thing anyone could do.
It was a good week.
So I get to this criminal special edition one shot, and I think, what is this? Is this a reprint? Yeah. What is this? I thought, because Image has been re-releasing the Criminal books that were originally through Marvel's
Icon
imprint with new nice trade dress and all that. And I thought, maybe they're just printing a, because it kind of looked kind of simple, whatever. And no, it was it's a new story about one of the old characters. And I haven't thought about Criminal in a little bit. I remember, I liked those. But, I don't think I'll go back, read them more. And I got to the end, and I don't know that I would say that I finished this and was like, well, that was it. That was the pick. But at the end of the whole thing, the big stack of comics, this was the one I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one that I was like, well, that was – like I guess I was surprised because I didn't know I was going to get a new issue. And B, I really enjoyed it the whole time through. I was like, oh, this is a really sort of – that sort of very back to basics, simple, fun criminal storyline. And I was like, I don't know who it is. And at the end, you're like, oh, that's really obvious. That's who it is. That's great.
Well, this it was a pretty great one shot. It's meaty.
Mm-hmm.
It plays with the medium of comics. It's the story of Teague Lawless, who we haven't seen a whole bunch. And there's a little essay in the back by Brubaker who says he's a pivotal character in the criminal verse, which he's loath to call it. But we haven't seen him a lot yet, which I assume means there'll be more coming. But
yeah,
so
yeah, I had to. All that stuff had to come back. I was like, right, there was a Tracy Lawless, and that was the kid in this, and I was putting it all together a little bit. Also, like, that doesn't matter. Like, you don't need to know any of that.
No, not just at all.
Like,
this is just a story of a guy trying to survive his last 2 weeks in jail because he's in jail for 30 days for contempt, missing his court appearance.
Yeah,
and he's a criminal. He had just robbed. Was it a bank? They just had an armed robbery.
Wasn't that the story from the Like, I feel like this is what happened right after.
Right, but he didn't go to jail for his armed robbery of the armored car. He went to jail for missing a court appearance. Or
wasn't the robbery story one of the other trades?
Could have been.
It's been I think it was.
Old trades, so.
Right, so I haven't read it for a while, but that was my feeling, was that this was sort of the thing that comes after that story had ended, and he got pinched, but he didn't get pinched because of the robbery. It was just because of something stupid, because he has impulse control problems. Shocking. The whole thing is framed around this sort of 70s proto Conan comic book done in black and white, more or less.
Zengar the Savage.
Yeah, sort of, you know, boobs and swords and you know, overwrought dialogue and everything. The stuff that you would have read in the 70s. And the whole thing is put through, you know, through that lens. There's little bits of it. And every time there's a part of the story that ends, it sort of cuts into the real quote-unquote part of the story, including a really sort of fun part at the end where the kid is reading the book,
right?
Which I thought was neat.
Yeah, so again, in the essay, he talks about how it was inspired by the fact that Brubaker had a dinner with a bunch of comic pros, and he found out that in the 70s and 80s, these kind of comics were really popular in prisons. So he wrote a story about a criminal in prison reading these Conan-esque comics, and it would, you know, comment on what was happening in the story. And it really was a showcase also for Sean Phillips' art, because
how did he find time to do this? That's insane.
I wonder if this has been going on in the background for a while.
I mean, it's not even like a short issue, and he's got whole new group of human characters to do. And then he did this just sort of as an aside. He did this fantasy comic that all had to be designed and drawn. Which I imagine must have been a shitload of fun. If I'm a comic book artist, that's what I want to draw.
Right.
I think. Yeah, I mean, like, it was a really great sort of issue. And when I, you know, after I read everything, I looked back at, like, well, what stood out for me? And I was like, well, this is, you know, that was the thing. There wasn't even a choice. Like, it was, I don't think it hit me on the head when I read it so much as after the fact.
Well, it was very much one of those comfortable shoe issues, you know? That doesn't downplay how good it was. It was really good. But it was also really good to go back to this world and these characters that we loved so much. I mean, if you look back on those old shows we used to do, those video shows, we talk about our top five comics. This was always in our top five.
Yeah, and I what's interesting is that I really still think of Criminal. This is one of those age things where I still think of Criminal as like a newish thing.
Right.
Like, I think of music from the early to mid-2000s as new, and it's, like, over a decade old now. Right. I don't know if Criminal's made it to a decade, but either way, like, we've come around to a nostalgia for a – I don't mean this in a bad way, but a nostalgia for a comic book that I still think of as sort of new and groundbreaking, that is actually quite old, that we've actually returned to. He's done a lot of stuff since then.
Right. And he's worked a lot with Sean Phillips since then. They've even got a great book out, The Fade Out, right now, which was a pick of the week a couple of weeks ago.
And, you know, before that, they did the – Fatale.
And then Sleeper, way back before Criminal.
Yeah. I mean, they're just one of those teams, like, yes, we think we're just going to work together. Which is cool. The, you know, the Rucka Lark, the Rigger Phillips.
And I'm more than happy to have them keep doing this. I would love, I mean, I love the Fade Out. If they want to, how can they do both? Can we clone? Can we do that yet? We can't clone yet.
Well, I mean, that really brings into a lot of nurture versus nature questions.
This is where you really miss Paul on the show, to talk about eugenics.
I thought we said we weren't going to do that anymore.
So you mentioned that you don't need to know the criminal backstory, and you don't. This is just a really great prison survival story. And there's, you know, the old man librarian, kind of like in Shawshank, and you know, the mob boss running the prison. And
I was totally waiting for that double cross, by the way.
Oh, I was certain that he was.
Yeah. I really liked the setup of the story where he thought that he knew who came after him, but the guy was like, no, it wasn't me, but also I'm not going to help you. Go fuck yourself. Which I love that level of criminality. Like, if you get out, I have a job for you, but also, you know, I hate you. And like the dude's super tough. He's Wolverine of criminal.
Right.
You know, like, so he doesn't go down or anything. I liked the layers. I really did like how it was really simple. And he was just like, what the hell's going on? Why? And at the end, you're just, that's a perfect answer. Like, it made perfect sense. It was very satisfying. And, like, this is another one of those ones where, you know, if you've heard us talk about Criminal for a really long time, I have seen a lot of tweets and things lately from people like, yes, I finally got Lazarus, and you guys were really right about it.
Right.
So this is, and thank you for that, by the way, because I, you know, it's going to take a long time to get to all those houses. And the less that I have on the list,
murder,
the better.
The less blood in your hands, the better.
Exactly. But this is one of those ones where if you've heard us talking about Criminal and you've been like, maybe you're like, just get this issue. This is one issue. It's a one shot. There's not a number on the cover. It's just one.
It'll give you a taste of the world, and if you like
it's
five
bucks.
If, yeah,
so,
and if you like it, and it's worth the $5, it's really thick.
Totally.
And if you like it, you got 6 volumes of Criminal out there.
Mm-hmm. And to read at your leisure.
If you're the first, if you're entering that world for the first time and you've got those 6 volumes, I envy you. Because that is a great world to enter. If you like crime stories, crime comics, this is the best out there.
Agree. Yeah. So, that was for me. That was the sort of most sort of satisfying book of the week. And it was a surprise. I didn't know it was coming. So that also helped.
That's cool. So now, what?
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 What? You know, you spoiled this for me.
I'm sorry.
What? Sort of. I didn't know it was going to happen. What
happened to Alfred in Batman 39?
Well, I believe our Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo made their mark.
What? So does this mean he's going to put a hook in his hand and grow hair, long hair and a beard? And
can only hope.
So in this issue... we're getting down to, I think it concludes next issue, right? The Endgame storyline. I think it says to be concluded at the end.
I think like with Superior Foes of Spider-Man, we're just like, is this the end of this story? Is this the one?
I'm scrolling. The DCF hates my iPad. So in this issue, the Joker...
That's weird. I could barely hear the two-stroke engine.
Yeah, it says to be concluded. So we're going to get the finale. So this is the second to last issue.
That's an old joke I'm not going to let die.
So the Joker enters the Batcave. He swims in from underground, and he's looking at all the trophies. I kind of liked that whole scene where he's sort of – it's like he's at a museum kind of.
I had to like reacquaint myself with the Court of Owls. I was like, wait, okay, how does this work? Where do they sit in this?
We'll get to the Court of Owls in a second. But as the Joker's going through the Gotham Underground Museum, Alfred appears with a shotgun, shoots – at the Joker, hits him, but not directly, so the Joker's face is all fucked up. And then the Joker manages to get the upper hand and chops off Alfred's hand with a meat cleaver.
You didn't take anything else away from this, did you?
Not really. It's pretty traumatizing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there was a lot of good stuff in the beginning of the Court of Owls and trying to figure out if the Joker... And we talked about this last time when... We had this issue 38, and I think that was Paul's last show, about whether or not the Joker is this immortal being of evil, or it's a misdirect. And there was nothing to indicate misdirect in this issue.
The old Court of Owls guy, the old Talon, didn't seem to...
But he's got some sort of mysterious substance in his blood, which makes me uneasy.
Yeah.
What'd you think of this issue?
I liked it. I've been enjoying it. I'm a little, it's so swirling and gigantic that, and it's been going on for such a long time that I have had a little hard time keeping a grasp on it. So I sort of read it for the moments.
I don't know. The Endgame's been all that long. I think it's going to be.
This is related to Court of Owls. So this basically goes back for 39 issues, which is over 3 years. It's a lot of story there that keeps going.
Right.
And that's not a complaint. That's really more about my own thing. I do have, I guess, what I would call doubts about the reveal of the criminals working with them. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really strange.
Yeah, so the Joker's going to unleash this gas into the city. And there was a little call, sort of thematic callback to the Jack Nicholson Joker at the end of the Batman 89. I really thought he was going to say, "Who do you love?"
I did too. I really thought that was going to happen.
But he's parading. I
thought he was going to say, "Who do you trust?"
Yeah, after maiming Alfred, he steals a bunch of the items and throws a parade with the dinosaur and the giant Joker card.
I thought that was cool. That's a great cover, too. That cover is spectacular.
Yes. But he's going to unleash this gas to the city that's going to destroy everything, so the Bat family calls upon Batman's villains to help because it's their city, too. So that's an old...
Yeah.
You know, that's an old story.
I feel like, and I think it's totally valid, but I feel like the versions of the characters that we've been working with...
Right, aren't a little too crazy.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I tend to think like Croc or like Free...
Croc would, because Croc is often shown to be like a misunderstood monster.
Freeze and Penguin, I could see them coming along. Maybe the movie of Bane kind of would. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, there's like...
Because Poison Ivy, if the gas is going to hurt the plants, then she would, but... I don't know.
Like, and then them all working together. And then the thing is, like, I don't want the story about them working together. know what I'm saying?
Well, you're not gonna, you're not really, because you only get one more.
Right?
Issue.
No, I know that. So that's actually fine. Like, I, you know, like I get it. That's a thing that happened. But I was a little like, I had to think about it. So I don't know if that's good or bad. Did it look a little different? Like, I had to actually check. I was like, is Capullo drawing this?
I didn't notice anything.
I don't know. Like, there's the page before the villain reveal, where Batgirl and like Jason. I don't even know who these people are.
Red Hood
and is that Red Robin? I guess.
Red Robin.
Some terrible costumes. Like, that just doesn't look like Greg Capullo to me.
Interesting.
And that's, you know, like, I feel like the shape of Batman is sort of changed. Like, he looks less hulking, I suppose. Look how short his cape is in that picture.
Yeah, it's true.
Again, it's not bad. It just looked.
That is weird. Why is that so?
It
short?
Just looked different.
It's like John Constantine's coat on the TV show.
His tiny little waistcoat.
I like that the Joker now kind of looks like Two-Face because half his face got blasted up. But also, his final line is, and now, friends, for my best trick of all, I wonder, that is my only indication that he's not the immortal, evil god.
I don't think he's going to be.
I hope not.
I think.
In a world where Alfred can get his hand chopped off, anything's possible.
I know, but the thing is, it's also a world where, like, I feel like Scott Snyder has a pretty rock-solid understanding of Batman and what works with him and what doesn't. And I think that he's pretty smart at throwing a feint. That's what I think.
I agree.
And honestly, Alfred getting his hand cut off is a sort of negligible way for him to sort of say, no, we're serious about this. You know, in the end, he didn't get killed. You know, it wasn't that. But it was like, oh, maybe he will do anything. But, you know what I mean? I mean, like, it adds to the red herring, I suppose.
Alfred should go hang out with Thor.
Alfred, as a former Battlefield medic, he can fix that up. And you know, like, the Batcave has what is widely considered to be the best duct tape available anywhere.
Get that nice.
Yeah.
Hurry up.
Yeah, this carbon fiber
don't
duct
fool
tape.
Around.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, that's true. Bat tape. Yeah. It'll heal you right
it's
up.
True.
Darth Vader number 2.
I really liked this.
Well, you know, this is because this was more like what we were looking for, which was a side story. This was just Darth Vader, and I'm going to call him Taggy, because there's two
D's. Yeah, okay. Tagra. from the Norway, or Tagra.
Supreme Admiral, what was his title?
Supreme General? Generally corrects him at one point.
So this was Darth Vader being sent off to find the droid ship is commandeered by the Empire, and they're going to find out who sent the droid ship, find out who stole the weapons.
Grand General. Sorry.
And there's a mole in the whole outfit, and this was fun.
But there wasn't though. Like Vader,
right?
Or at least there was, but it wasn't who he threw to the wolves. Yeah, it was like a fun like short story that existed in between the pages, and it all seemed to work and fit for me. I really like Vader as being subservient to somebody. It doesn't even matter who, you know. And then to also have like the toady. You know, as the guy who has to do it. Of course, this one we get. I don't remember what Nine Numb's race is, but we got a Twi'lek guy. We got a Mon Cal guy with a helmet. You know, a bunch of those. We got some droidicas. Right. Like, there's all sorts of fun stuff.
I like seeing the astromech droids on the outside of ships.
Yeah,
because you forget that's sort of their design.
I really like the astromech, like action scenes. You just sort of see there's a little that bit at the end, droids, one can always trust droids. Like, I was like, that's good stuff. That's what I want out of this. I was really pleased. And who'd have thought that I've enjoyed the Salvador LaRocca art more than the John Cassaday art?
Well, I decided this week I'm not going to continue with Star Wars.
Really? I can't not.
I'm just not.
I can't not. I will keep people updated on that. Yeah, it was kind of I was really kind of enjoyable.
As long as they stay on the fringes with these stories, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
And this was really fun.
Yep, it was. That's good. I'm glad it wasn't just me. You read Aquaman these days?
Well, when someone has the pick, they are in charge of producing the show. And so what they do is when the pick is selected, they send out a list of books that they want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And then the other person adds their books to the list. And I was shocked to see Aquaman 39 on your list.
I really just wanted to do an Aquaman check-in.
I'm still reading it.
Because we haven't talked about it in a while, and I realize that I'm sort of going along in a vacuum, but I keep reading it, mainly because I'm a Jeff Parker fan, so I kind of want to read what he does. I like his voice. This is, you know, it's not my favorite book or anything, but I do keep reading it, and it's fun. And I was curious what...
You said that like the Bob said they're a Michael Bolton fan.
I celebrate his whole catalog.
You do?
I do. That's true. I like Jeff. I think his mind's in the right place for where comics need to be, and he's a good person to be at DC. That's what I think.
I think this book is okay.
I kind of am with that, I think. But I like that there are big ideas and big things going on. It feels very superhero comic booky, without trying to reinvent anything.
There's nothing standout-ish. I think the elements of the story that I really liked in the beginning of Jeff Parker's run, where he had some really good banter between Mera and Aquaman, and they had a really nice relationship, sort of has been pushed to the back for the big old story plot that's happening. And I think the art is fine. And the
See, I think
fine.
That the art, at first, book. I wasn't really sold on Pelletier, but now I've actually been really enjoying it, because in this sort of story, I mean, I totally know what you're saying, and it's fine, but this one has got big crazy monsters and
that's where Parker and Pelletier excel, there's
a giant turtle, there's big rhino things. I was just enjoying it on that aspect as a 70s comic, almost like it just sort of fantasy and the giant volcano god coming out of that. I was down with all of that.
I like that you didn't get the traditional plot twist here. So the story, Aquaman's searching for his mother, who's long been thought dead, but has instead been sort of exiled to another, is it dimension?
Realm
or
something.
Realm.
Doesn't matter.
And so when he finds her in this issue, you expect the sort of story that, you know, the reconciliation, the tearful son and mother moment. But in this one, she goes, he's probably not my son, so we should just kill him.
Yeah.
And so they have a big old fight. And so I liked that, not getting what I thought I was going to get. But overall, it's okay.
I like the big comic book stuff, and I'm gonna keep going with it. I think we're on about the same page. I think I might make it a little bit more than you, but that's fine.
Which is strange, considering it's
I know, but I really always want to like Aquaman. I feel like that's
I love.
I know you do. I feel like there's a bit of a counterculture about liking Aquaman, and also pretty soon everyone's gonna be in on Aquaman, and you're not gonna this blonde guy with the orange shirt. Like he's dead. So you only get so much of this left, at least for like 5-10 years.
Until Geoff Johns steps down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, did you read The Black Hood number one?
No, I don't even know what that is. What is that?
The Black Hood number one is the newest book from Dark Circle Comics, which
is the Archie
imprint at Archie that Alex Segura runs.
Crime writer, Alex Segura.
He's a crime novelist. He's a senior VP of marketing and publicity at Archie, but he's also the editor of Dark Circle Comics. And what he's done is he's gotten together a lot of fellow crime novelists to write these books. And this is Dwayne Sierczynski writing, and this is Michael Gatos on art.
Why didn't you – where was my warning on this kind of thing?
I did not do that, and that's where my fault lies.
You know where my weak spots are, my blind spots.
This is interesting for a number of reasons. Number one, this is an Archie comic featuring lots of adult language.
Is it an Archie comic, like in the Archie? Is there a word for Archie Riverdale?
No. I mean, it's a Dark Circle comic, which is an imprint of Archie Comics.
Gotcha.
But it features fucking shit and all, you know, all the words you associate with adult comics, which was a little shocking. Number two, the Gatos art was a lot heavy on the Photoshop side. It was, there's a lot of photography run through Photoshop filters to look like drawings, especially in the backgrounds, which I don't love. But the story was really interesting and fun. It's set in Philadelphia. As a cop, really handsome and charming cop. He's a motorcycle cop, and he gets called to a report of men with guns near a school. So he runs over there, doesn't wait for backup because he's worried about the kids, and ends up getting shot, much like the Joker, in the face with a shotgun. And so his good looks are gone. Half his face is all just hamburger. And what's happening was the scene he rolled up on was this local vigilante called the Black Hood fighting, you know, it's just a dude with a ski mask fighting with these local gang members. And so this issue is the cop recovering psychologically from the shooting, having to deal with speech therapy. He's gotten hooked on pills. And at the end of it, he, you know, goes a little nuts, and his fellow cops had presented him with the ski mask as a sort of trophy, and so at the end of the issue, he puts it on and runs out into the world. So so right now it's a drug addicted cop with a ski mask on, calling himself the Black Hood. That's the issue ends literally with him jumping down to stop a mugging, saying, "I am the Black Hood." So it was really dark.
Well,
you know, there's a lot of he's hooked on pills. He's psychologically all screwed up.
So I mean, I guess he's a,
I think you would like
he's it. A vigilante in a mask, though. So it's sort of a dark criminal superhero story.
Yeah, I mean, these characters, these Black Circle comics are all superhero right. comics. So there's, I mean, these are all old characters from, I think, the Golden Age or around the, or maybe later. So they're all old properties.
Is there anything left to say with those kind of characters?
Well, right now, what they're doing is Straczynski seems to be doing a super realistic mm-hmm. take on it. Mm-hmm. But we'll see where it goes from there. But I liked that it was completely not what I expected it to be. I don't know what I expected it to get. I expected some more like in the vein of Afterlife with Archie, which is a more adult take on a children's property, but it's still within the realm of that world. This was super like heavy and adult.
Don't they eat humans?
Yeah, but it's still. I mean,
yeah,
it's,
but that's
it's
just
it's in a zombie, and there's implied, you know, all kinds of stuff. But this is like laid out mm-hmm. there, and it's really gritty, and the art. Despite the heavy photoshopping, I really did like the Gatos character mm-hmm. work, and who he loved from Alias, yeah. obviously. And I think you'll like
all
this.
All right, I'll check it out.
This is so it's and there's a bunch of them coming out. I don't know if I'm gonna read them all. This one appealed to me for the creative team, so I picked this one up. And Straczynski is a Philadelphia native, so this is sort of his peon to his hometown.
That's nice.
So it was really good. I enjoyed it. The Black Hood number one from Dark Circle Comics, which is an imprint of Archie. Check it out. Also, you can get some comics at ifanboy.com/Amazon if you want to buy some collected editions. That's how you help the show. By going there, clicking on the Amazon link, making all your purchases. You don't have to buy comics. You can buy whatever you like. Just bought some camera equipment for work, so that'll help. doing my
just
bit
work.
For Queen of Country. So if you go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, that's how we help keep the lights on. And another way we do that is ifanboy.com/registration. Where for $3 a month or $30 a year, you can help the show out directly by becoming an iFanboy member. Contributing to the show, keeping it going, keeping the bills paid, keeping all the comic book love spreading throughout the land via iFanboy. So we thank you all who do both those things.
Boy, sex number 20 just continues the blue balls of this thing, huh?
That was the most awkward date I've read in
a while. I know, and it was totally counter to the expectations of what... It's a sitcom of will they or won't they now, and they won't!
So this issue, sex, as you've probably heard, although this book doesn't come out all that regularly, so maybe if you're a new listener, you don't know, sex is a sort of an allegory for Batman, the best superhero allegory out there. So I'm fine with that. So Batman finally goes on a date with Catwoman, a real like serious. He shaved his soul patch. They're at a restaurant date, and it just goes spectacularly wrong, and not even any kind of big superhero way. It's just. Through their conversation, it's just so awkward.
It's not even like, oh, man, this is awkward, isn't it? Ha ha, like, pisses her off.
Yeah, like, he just doesn't know how to deal with it.
It's great, but I also just, I'm like, oh, man, let him have a good night. But they can't, and they won't. And then she took her clothes off and jumped off a building.
It's easy to jump through the rooftops when you're not wearing your dress. Yeah. So I guess that's what. But I liked also the flashback to them as, you know, in their prime, which is only 5 years ago. Which some would say about us is, I love that we still don't get a look at him.
No, that's a great rule.
Like we see her in her full costume glory. She looks just like Catwoman. We've seen glimpses of parts of his costume. But we've never really seen him fully on. And here we only really see his chest logo silhouetted against, black.
And I would like to think that the Iron Saint, the Armored Saint, or it's Iron Saint, something like that. Sounds like a, Astro City character when I say it. I would like to think that is a rule of the book. And it's not like...
I hope so.
It's not as if... We're not waiting. Like, eventually they're going to reveal it because that's always going to be a letdown. The rule is you just don't show that. Right. Which is fine. Hint at it. That's fine.
But I just love that the build-up's been so high. They both have been really into it. They've been flirting. They showing up at each other's apartments and teasing this out. And then it just happens and it's just a fucking disaster.
Ugh.
It
really was very good, and it you know, like, it took the left turn on their expectations, which is what good fiction does.
Oh, Simon Cook, when will you get laid?
He's not going to, man. I'm telling you, it's going to keep building up, and he's going to go nuts.
He's going to have a stroke when it
finally
happens.
Exactly. best stroke ever. Whoa. So the Thor Annual number one, I wanted to make a quick mention of. I feel like we throw a lot of Thor love around. This is three short stories by Jason Aaron. Someone I don't remember, and CM Punk.
You don't remember who Jason
Aaron
is?
I remember Jason Aaron.
He's a writer for comics.
I was talking about the writer for the middle. Oh. If you'd just let me vamp, I would have gotten there. But sorry. Instead,
I jumped on your joke.
It's fine. It wasn't even a joke. I was just like, I don't know what to say. Did you pick this up? Did you read it?
I thought about it, but again, with the 19 books, I didn't want to add anything new. So I went past it.
I'll tell you what excited me. Jason Aaron wrote a story about old Thor with art by Tim Truman, which was really very nice. It was, I like Tim Truman, but I think of him as a certain kind of artist, and I think that he gave this a sort of retro kind of look. But it was really nice and naturalistic. I really enjoyed that about old King Thor. Because if you remember the last time we saw him, like the earth was just a husk, and he's decided to sort of bring it back to life. Right. So that his granddaughters see him down there, and he's all grim and stuff, and they make life for him on the planet. But there's no text or anything left, so all their animals are a little weird. So like their elephants have like 10 tusks, and their sharks have bat wings and fly around. By the way, that's a mistake. And like the zebras have
whoa, this is going to reinvigorate our old classic flying sharks.
Well, I mean, I don't think Jason Aaron is unaware of that.
Flying sharks or flying monkeys, which is more terrifying, Josh?
There's an Adam and Eve couple, Jane and Steve.
See, now I... That's funny.
They were Adam and Eve, not Jane and Steve. It turns out they were Jane and Steve. So...
I'm going to go back and...
Yeah, this, then there's a this sort of a... Let's see. I'm just trying to get the name of it because their name isn't on the beginning of it. It's a story about the new Thor. I'm not going to say Lady Thor because... And then the last story is written by wrestler CM Punk in his comic book writing debut with art by Rob Guillory, which I didn't know about.
I remember him talking about
Young Thor. I dug that a lot. So it's Noel Stevenson and Marguerite Sauvage doing the middle story. They were all enjoyable short stories. And it was the kind of thing that like it was a different look and a different feel. Basically, in the middle one, she's hanging out in the tavern in Asgard for some reason, and the Warriors 3 are giving her shit, and then she has to prove herself, and she does, and then they like her. I mean, they basically like they accept her, and and then they the last one is they young Thor tricks Mephisto, drawn by Rob Guillory. Like it was a fun issue.
Well, I will be checking it out then.
Basically, that segment turned into me telling Connor why he needed to read it. So hopefully that worked for some of you.
Jerk.
I think I can say with some certainty.
Yes.
If this was the last issue of All New Avengers by James Robinson.
Invaders.
How I did it. I was looking at Avengers somewhere else. In All New Invaders.
15.
Yeah, number 15.
It was the last issue.
Yeah, because it says the end at the end. I was like, okay, I feel like I can go ahead and definitely speak to that. And Steve Pugh. I agree this was a cool little series that I don't necessarily think it ever found its feet or was given a chance to find its feet.
Yeah, it's tough because... I felt like every time I found my groove with it, it would radically switch.
Because they had to.
Stories or characters or whatever.
Because I feel like it was existing in the midst of all this other stuff, and he had to keep working around it. You know, like Captain America changes.
This is a perfect book to live in that new sort of DC paradigm in which you don't worry about continuity.
Right.
You know, I would love to have a book where I just read about those characters having adventures and not worry about making it fit what was happening. And I'm sure James Robinson would have loved to write that
book. I'm sure, and I think he would have been exemplary at it.
Yeah, but it sort of fell victim to the constantly churning Marvel universe.
So all that being said, I there was a couple things I really liked about this, and I just wanted to pick them out because I've enjoyed this series. I don't think it needed to go on forever.
It's a totally fun series.
I thought CPU did really nice art. The sort of first shot of them sort of standing up on the edge of the helicarrier over the ocean, like it's just really nice composition. And basically Namor. And Human Torch and Steve Rogers are all just having a conversation about stuff. And I like that, you know, Namor's a crusty son of a bitch, but these are the two characters who can just talk to him straight out.
Absolutely. That's what's
I
great.
I really,
about.
Really like that. And, you know, I like that Steve Rogers is a little bit embittered. Just like he's, he's not used to this. You know, so they're basically just telling stories about the stuff that had happened and talking to each other and being friends who were chatting after a bunch of stuff happened.
And James Robinson excels at thumbing his nose at all the stories he didn't get to tell.
Yeah.
He did that a long time ago in Justice League of America or just whatever the title of that book was, but he did it again here. And these are the things I would have done had the book continued. Blah, blah, blah.
Which is kind of bold because he's just blowing it out. Yeah. You could use that somewhere else. Nope. I'm going to do something new. I will say, having them talk about this makes me not really like the new Captain America as much. Because you're like, It's an interesting story, but that dude's not Captain America.
He's not, and it still does continue to bug me that they call him Cap,
yep.
And he's an expert with the shield and all that stuff. I wait for the return of Steve and Thor and all.
It's a nice. Yeah, but, I mean, but it's interesting in the same way that, you know, watching Bucky be Cap for a while was interesting too.
Yeah, but even that I got sick totally. About six.
Because it's not about Captain America. It's about Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
For me, that's right. The thing that's interesting. Man Absolutely. Out of time.
Speaking of James Robinson, Fantastic Four 643. I believe this is the final arc of Fantastic Four. What they've done for the last two issues is gone back to the original numbering, which is always a sign that the book is ending or something big is about that. We know the book is ending. And what's been fun about this particular arc is that we're using the classic comic book story of there's been a villain. It's the ultimate retcon. There's been a villain in the background this entire time, going back to the early days of the team, who's been orchestrating events against the team. And so there's this guy from college who was in love with Sue and is going to ask her out, but Reed got to her first, and so now he's been jealous this whole time, and he was a super genius too, so he went the super genius villain route and has been orchestrating events against the team this whole time. And so this has been a really fun arc, and I've been loving the way that Mr. Fantastic has been drawn. He's been drawn sort of like a middle-aged dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's kind of got a longer face, and his body, when he's not stretchy, just kind of looks like a guy of his age.
Who draws this?
I think it's Leonard Kirk.
Okay.
I just don't have it open in front of me. But I've actually been really liking this particular arc really quite a bit. So then it's been a lot of guest stars, Spider-Man and the Avengers. And he's throwing everything in the bucket before Ike pulls the plug on this book.
I can't catch a break.
And I also wanted to really quickly mention S.H.I.E.L.D. number 3, which is the series that's bringing in the TV characters. And this issue is a team-up with Spider-Man. Each issue has been a team-up with a different Marvel character that they could never use in the show. And strangely, or interestingly enough, has featured different artists. In this issue, Alan Davis.
How are the shoulders?
Well, there wasn't a lot of chance for him to draw high fashion because this issue takes place inside Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum because there's some sort of interloper in the Sanctum Sanctorum.
How was the hair? Mullets? Do you have mullets?
There. Well, you really only had Coulson.
Okay.
And he's got the thinning.
No one knows what Coulson looks like, so it's not really a problem.
That's true.
Now, what's weird, though, is that I feel like issue 1 and 2 came out very quickly after one another, and that was a while ago.
Yeah, they were like back-to-back weeks almost.
Right. But maybe it was only a month ago, and I don't know. But
Marvel shipping has really warped our sense of what a normal schedule for a book is.
I agree.
Mark Waid continues to have down the voices of these characters. Mm-hmm. Even though this issue only really features Coulson, he really nails it. You can really hear Clark Gregg in the dialogue. He'd actually be a great writer on the show, as it turns out, from these books.
I'm sure.
If you like the show and don't get to see, wish you could see other Marvel characters on the show, you'll never see there. This is the book for you. And also, if you like these artists, because they've had three really great artists in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the plan is going forward, but I was really shocked to see and surprised and delighted to see Alan Davis art on the book.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is always nice to see, so... S.H.I.E.L.D. number 3.
Well, cool.
And those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. There's a lot of books. Those are not all the books. We could talk about others, but those are the ones we decided to highlight this week. If you go to ifanboy.com, you can find the post for the show, and you can talk about these books or other books.
Boy, there were a lot of others. There were many, many others.
A lot of others.
It's true.
A lot of books. I got some email questions for you, Josh. You ready?
Just for me? Okay, I got it. Johnny M., I'm attending my first ever comic convention, WonderCon, in Anaheim this April with my wife, my daughter, 2 years old, and two other family members. I already purchased the badges for the four of us for Saturday the 4th, and I was wondering, what should I expect? What do I need to take? Food, supplies, backpacks, etc.? What do I need to do to get the most out of my first con, and what are some things that I have to do or experience while I'm there? I really want to meet creators, get stuff signed, and buy cheap hardcovers and trade paperbacks since I don't buy a lot of single issues. Any help would be amazing and greatly appreciated.
Now, I wanted to highlight this for two reasons.
Yeah.
One, we haven't dealt with cons stuff like this in a while.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure there are people who are new to the show who don't. We used to talk about cons all the time when we would go to them. So it'd be good to revisit sort of the con etiquette and what to expect at a show. Plus, he's got a young kid, so you maybe have to throw some insight into that.
Yeah.
And then the second reason we'll get to after the end of the email.
Okay.
So what expect at a con, Josh?
Well, I have to go back here because now I'm starting to worry. Like, have things changed? Like, do they still have comics at that?
I was at Comic Con last year. Nothing's changed.
Okay, so
it's literally the same experience.
You're just there for a day.
The day thing is difficult because The cheap hardcovers and trades tend to happen on the Sunday, on the last day of the show, because they're trying to get out of there and make some sort of profit. So they're still trying to get the full price on Saturday.
I got to.
And that's the day everybody's there.
Yeah, too. The cheap thing has been over. Like at the end of the day, you can sometimes find some stuff, but internet mail order and stuff is kind of flattened out the sort of bargains and stuff that you can get, because every time I used to log, even when I was there, you know, however many years ago when I was walking around, I just stopped looking because I could get everything I needed sort of easily and more cheap, and I didn't have to carry it around.
Right.
You know, just which isn't really going to be a problem for everyone. If you're just going for a day, maybe you're driving in or whatever. For me, it was always like I have to carry whatever back in my luggage, and I just didn't want to deal with it. That kid in there is a wrench. And it really depends on it totally depends on what your daughter's like. I took my kid when he was 4 to a really small show, and he was bored out of his friggin' mind because he just doesn't care about most of that stuff. My kid's weird.
Do you remember that time where we were at a panel? This was really early on because it was back when we still went to panels, and we were at that panel and we watched just the kid in front of us just completely bored, and then he fell asleep.
No,
while his father was riveted by what was being said.
That sounds like a great kid.
It was a microcosm of comics.
Yeah.
It was like the 40-year-old dad was riveted, and the 5-year-old kid just could not have cared less about Spider-Man.
I mean, it's just that, like, 2-year-olds take a lot of attention and time and, like, naps and stuff. And for me, like, I feel like that's going to be hard to have. I don't know how packed this show is, but it's
a fairly well-attended show.
Yeah.
I haven't been to it yet.
That's going to make it hard to do all of those things that you just mentioned. You're probably going to have to pick and choose a few of them.
Well, meeting creators have signed. That shouldn't be a problem. This is one of those comics-focused shows.
That's good. You know, I mean,
it's like Wonder. You remember WonderCon in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Similar to that. So meeting people is always.
But it depends on who you're talking about when you say people.
That's true.
Like,
that is
like if
true.
You mean Jim Lee, you're going to be in line for half the day.
If you mean
sort of some of the cool smaller artists, guys who aren't necessarily as well known or whatever, but you like their work. Who have their own tables, that's totally doable. You can walk around, you can meet people, buy something from these people, for God's sakes. You know, get a sketch or two, get some stuff signed, let them know you're reading their work. That's rad. You should totally do that. That's like an artist alley kind of thing, or at their own tables, which is different than like sort of waiting in the big lines that are at the publisher booths.
Right. But those still tend to move pretty quickly, the publisher lines, depending on who you're talking about.
Yeah. You know, you got that kid, so you better know to bring snacks.
You've got to bring a backpack, bring water, bring some snacks to snack on.
Bring a lot of snacks, or a huge wad of money if you really like overpriced crappy pretzels. I don't know what supplies you need,
It's hard because when we used to do these emails, it was usually about being there for like the full time. But one day in and out, you don't really need as much. You're not really there for the duration.
You know what? You're gonna provided that your kid's fine for the whole thing. And I guess if you're taking her, you're assuming she is. You're gonna have a good time. You're gonna have a day. You're gonna probably leave wanting more.
Mm-hmm.
You're totally gonna leave wanting more, which is so much of a better feeling than 3 days in going, I just want to go home. That's all I want. So that's really cool. Have fun. Just respect. One thing I know from creators is respect that those guys are they're there to work. They're there to meet people. They're there to do everything. But freebies aren't sort of the best thing. If you buy stuff from them, you get sketches, you do stuff like that. That's how they pay for their being able to show up and you being able to go there and meet them. The shows aren't paying them. They're paying to be there. But I've always said the best thing about comics is that it's the place where you get to meet the people. You really get to meet the people who are doing
stuff. And they're super happy to have you,
absolutely,
have you there. Come by the table, say hi. And so that is, at a show like this, if you're looking to meet, and especially if you've never met anyone who makes comics, this is a great kind of way to do it.
Yeah.
You'll have a great time.
It's really satisfying to be able to tell somebody, I really like your work. And it's really satisfying for somebody to hear somebody tell them, listen, I really like your work. So I think that's one of the magical things about it that you get to look forward to. And maybe you'll find that great table that has a bunch of stuff that no one else wanted that is gold to you, and you're going to get a great deal on it.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm still annoyed that a couple years ago I didn't buy some of those Gabriel Hardman's character sketches that were so cheap, and now they're like 4 times as much.
Yeah.
Stupid old Connor.
Hey, one more thing, and I hate to have to do this to you, but if you have a little kid, you have a stroller. Be mindful of that stroller.
Yeah.
Do not block the aisles. You're gonna piss off 100 people you can't even see. So you got to go where you got to go and do your thing, but just be mindful because it's a ton of people doing stuff together. The more everybody sort of works together, the more fun it is.
Yeah. So then WonderCon is interesting because we're not ready to announce any details, but there is going to be some sort of
a thing,
thing happening at WonderCon involving people on this show doing something. That's very vague and annoying. But I just
checked the veracity of everything you said, and fact-wise, it checks out.
Because we haven't locked down the details yet. And it hasn't been announced yet. But if you're going to be at WonderCon and you're a fan of the show, I don't even know what day. I don't know anything.
April 5th through 8th?
No, no, I don't know. I know what day the show is.
No, not 8. 3 to 5.
Yeah, I just don't know what day our thing is going to be. There's going to be an iFanboy thing happening at WonderCon of some fashion, and we haven't locked down the details, but as soon as we have them, we will mention in the show. We'll do a post on the website, and we'll put it on our social media. But if you're going to be there and you're a fan of the show, keep your ears and eyes open. There's going to be a pretty cool event happening at WonderCon. And I haven't been to this WonderCon yet, so this is going to be my first time going
there. If you have the stones.
If I have the stones, there will be an event happening at WonderCon. So keep your ears and eyes open for that.
Cool.
Now we got an email from Matt B. Matt says, so I've always been a big fan of Garth Ennis, and over the years of listening to the show, I've become a big fan, especially of his war stuff, like war stories and battlefields. Ennis has done some stuff about World War II, stuff in Vietnam and Korea, and now his current arc is set during the Arab-Israeli War, and I was wondering, has he ever done anything set during the Troubles in Northern Ireland? It seems like it'd be a no-brainer, but I can't seem to remember him doing anything in Ireland outside of Preacher. If this is indeed something that is currently missing from his oeuvre, do you have any recommendations for anything else on the subject? To be honest, I don't know much about it outside of U.S. songs. And I actually did some research on this, Josh.
Good, because I'm thinking real hard. And if I had known, I would have put aside 7-8 hours for it. No, I mean other than he has
not war stories.
No, not war stories. I'm thinking of the first thing that showed up was Cassidy's story, but that's during the 1914 Revolution, 1917, World War One era. And I know that his characters have been touched by it and commented on it.
Well, he's just important note, if you don't know, he is from North.
Yeah.
He's from Hollywood. I thought it was Hollywood, but it's Hollywood.
Hollywood. Also weird accent.
His first comics work were stories about the Troubles.
Really?
Yeah.
It would have been fairly closer to when it was happening. He would have grown up right in it.
And I'm reading this straight from Wikipedia, folks.
Do I have to sort of like give a like this is the terrorism and the fighting and the factional dishes?
Well, his very first story was it appeared in a series called Troubled Souls, mm-hmm. Within an anthology called Crisis, illustrated by John McCrae,
mm-hmm. who's also from Northern Ireland.
Yeah, a story of a young apolitical Protestant man caught up by the fate in the violence of the Irish Troubles.
It sounds, knowing how people write, like a fairly self-biographical sort of thing, doesn't it?
Yes, and he did a sequel for A Few Troubles More.
Guy loves westerns.
Which was a comedy taking place in the Troubles, featuring some of the characters from that first story.
That's ballsy.
So
I feel like Kit from his Hellblazer series,
Oh, wait, he had another one. Christ, he did a story called True Faith in that same Crisis anthology. Mm-hmm. It was a religious satire taking place during the Troubles, drawn by War and Police. All of these Trouble stories mm-hmm. were collected in a single collection put out by Vertigo in 1997.
Wow.
So there's a collection out there of Ennis's writing about the Troubles.
I'm going to go ahead and take this one step further, though.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like all of his work is very I don't know if he wrote how much literally he did about it, but I feel like a lot of it is affected by it.
Oh, he has been working through these issues
exactly.
For
I mean,
20
like,
years.
Preacher is about religion. It's about God. It's about which is the basis of the Troubles.
Right.
There's Kit from the Hellblazer series, who's a Northern Irish girl, sort of an idealism of that, of an idea. It's all in there. Like, he's constantly going back to war stuff because he grew up in a war zone,
yeah.
more or less.
Yeah.
And then you can idealize the American Western, mm-hmm. As an antidote to that, as a thing to get in besides that. And also, like, a perverse black sense of humor, which is what you need to get
to survive
through that.
The world. Yeah.
That's an amazing question. And Connor, nice work.
I read it. I was like, that's a great question. We should probably know the answer.
It's good, good job.
Vamping like we normally do. But and I also wanted to know the answer.
Yeah.
It was funny because he also asked for other subject matter. The first thing that popped in my head was the Queen of Country story that was set in the Troubles.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah, that was a was that the Anthony Johnston one? Well, that was
yeah.
That wasn't yeah. by Greg Rucka. That was
no, it was the one time somebody else wrote
it's in the fourth book.
Yeah,
like I vaguely remember it. It was like
I remember enjoying it quite a bit.
Was it Paul? Was it a Paul Crocker story from before?
It might have been.
He was Diops. I think it was.
Yeah, so if you're looking for Northern Ireland comic stories, check out the fourth volume of Queen and Country, which has a story on it. And
you know what? Just check out the first three with it also.
Well, that's true. I haven't read any books on it.
You know, it's one of those things that every once in a while it pops up and I think I need to read a book about this and then I haven't. I've seen a few movies, but I don't feel like they usually...
It's hard because, especially growing up in New York, surrounded by all the Irish friends and immigrants, mm-hmm. It was always very prevalent...
Yeah,
in my daily life, discussed people talking about it, but I never really read any fiction on it or nonfiction on it.
There's a 30 for 30 documentary about the bombing that took place in a pub during the, I want to say the 92 World Cup.
Wow, really?
Interesting. I think I'm trying to remember what it's called, but there's a 30 for 30 that like Ireland had made it like really far, which they don't usually because they're not a great.
No, they're not.
They'd been doing really well, and then like during the game, there was this little tiny pub in Northern Ireland that had been blown up. This was a really big story at the time, but that was a really good documentary. It's depressing. It's a really sad, yeah. Huge story that I don't know enough to talk about without sounding stupid and disrespectful about it. But
so Matt B, you can check out. Look, I don't even know the title of that collection. It doesn't say it here. I assume it is. Let's see. You just vamp for a second.
Okay.
I want to see if I can find the title of this book.
I got to.
Oh, here we go. Oh. It's called Troubled Souls. And it's called Troubled Souls. And Vertigo republished it. It's probably not, most likely, definitely not in print anymore.
I can't imagine, no.
But you might be able to find it somewhere online.
But there was a time when Karen Berger, she'd publish anything that Garth Ennis did.
Right.
With perfectly good reason, I might add.
Yeah, so check that out, or check out book four, and then, as Josh said, book 1 through 3 of Queen of Country. And then I just watched recently In the Name of the Father, and that's such a good movie.
Yeah.
It's such a good movie.
Well, you die.
Daniel Day-Lewis. So sad.
I saw that when I was a kid, and like I had no idea what I was watching.
Watch it again as an adult.
Yeah, no, I've no doubt. He Possible Waite and Daniel Day-Lewis. That's good.
It's a good cast. Yeah. So thank you, Matt and Johnny. The email is
I'm still trying to work my way with you, American Civil War. So I'm going to get there eventually. The other day, I was in
Did you say through your American Civil War?
Yeah. I said the American Civil War.
Oh.
The other day, I was in a Barnes & Noble, and I went to the military history section, and I just had a breakdown. I was like,
I'm never seen again.
No, I was like, I'm never gonna get to this. Like, no, there's just too much. Like, if I only wanted to read biographies on Robert E. Lee... Like, I'd never make it.
Josh, there's an entire industry of people just constantly writing about the Civil War. You'll never make it through.
I haven't even come close to
no. filling.
Not even close. I'm reading the Shelby Foote books, for God's sakes.
There's literally hundreds of those books published every year.
That book, by the way, is not on the Vertigo app. I don't know if that's
I guarantee you it's not in print anymore.
Yeah.
Contact at fanboy.com. Our voicemail line is 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. If you call in, keep around 30 seconds. So that's how you get on the show. That's how you get the show like Johnny and Matt. Both really good questions. Thank you. Thank you this week. Two quick things to mention. Agent Carter just ended. A lot of people asked if we were going to do a podcast on it, and the answer is maybe.
Have you been watching it?
Yes, but it's more of a scheduling problem. I'm literally about to leave for a week. I go out of town. I don't know when I'm going to be able to record it. It's a scheduling headache. That may or may not happen. But in April, a week after WonderCon, is when Daredevil hits Netflix, and we will definitely be doing a show on that. When that exactly comes out, I don't know because we have to watch all the episodes, but there will definitely be a Daredevil podcast. There will maybe be an Agent Carter podcast.
I will try to be on that Daredevil podcast, but it'd have to be later.
It's also the same weekend that Game of Thrones comes back, so it's going
to
be a very...
I tried to rewatch the last season, and I was a little bored.
Last season wasn't as good as the one before. Yeah. And then, as we mentioned earlier, obliquely, there's going to be a WonderCon announcement coming soon, hopefully in the next week. Well, hopefully on the next show or the show after, we'll have the details on the WonderCon announcement, but... If you're going, if you got tickets, and you want to be involved in an iFanboy event, keep your eyes out. Keep your ears out.
There you are.
And in the meantime, before WonderCon, head over to iFanboy.com, comment on this show, talk about this week's books, find all of our other podcasts, follow us at Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter, and follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan at C.S. Kilpatrick on Twitter.
If you like the show, go write a review in iTunes, pass the word along, tell your friends about it, post it on your social networks, move it around, do what you can to help spread it around if you're so inclined. If you enjoy the show, that's always a big thing for us. I love seeing recommendations. People are like, hey, what's a good comics podcast? And someone still says, you know, like, oh, this is my favorite. I love seeing that. That's my bet. You know, after,
yes, thank you so much.
After all this time, thank you very much. It's
not even my favorite.
Well, you don't listen to comics
podcasts. It is my favorite. I don't listen to this.
I don't listen to that kind of crap. No, just kidding.
I have to listen to this show. It's the only way I can maintain an erection.
Wow. Wow. Are we gonna go that direction from now on?
Why not? There's no one to stop us, Josh. There's no one to reel us in.
Sky's the limit, baby. You can be as tasteless as you want.
Tasteless as we want to be.
Yep.
iFanboy story. So, did you finish your bit? I wasn't even listening.
Yeah, I did.
All right.
I got this one. Hang on. Here we go.
Before we get to the show, on a serious note, we are all bummed about Leonard Nimoy and bad, sad news of his passing, and we are all big fans of his. So he had a good life. Long life. Very creative life.
Yeah. Good guy from all accounts. Interesting guy.
Yes. So
well lived.
As everyone that I know is saddened, and we are as well. So that is our bring it down moment for the show. But that's life.
Remember, it's not how he said it. I didn't enunciate
live
that.
Live long and prosper, Josh.
Yeah. He's the one who said that?
That's what Spock says.
Yeah,
yes.
I know that. I was being... Sorry.
You're being yourself.
Yep. And what we found with myself is it goes a lot like that date in Sex 20.
So, until next week's show, I'm Connor.
I am Josh. The oldest Josh there has ever been. Oh, my creaking bones.
If you want the world to know, we won't let hatred grow. Put a little love in your heart, and the world will be a better place. And the world will be a better place for you and me. You just wait and see.
Space, the final frontier. These are the continuing voyages of the starship Enterprise. Their ongoing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.